We are not professing to tell you the complete story of these activities. We are professing to tell you the complete story that we know. These records that we've uncovered don't tell the story.
This is CIA files.
They tell pieces of it.
True stories of U.S. intelligence.
This is the second part of our three-part series on the CIA directors who shaped the U.S.'s policy with present-day Russia. We'll also go over some recent intelligence news, including the tale of an accused Russian spy who is complaining that the FBI is preventing him from paying his bills while he is detained. He might be a spy, but he wants to keep his good credit. We'll also discuss some goings-on in Sudan and discuss the recent leak of intelligence data. I'm going to tell you about the life of an American. So American, he's a walking stereotype. If you look up typical middle American in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of Robert Gates. He looks innocent, unassuming, trustworthy, like the church usher. It's not just his looks. His life, too, is the real stuff of Americana. He grew up in Kansas, played trumpet in the marching band, and enjoyed debate club. This man's early life imitates that of Captain America, and like Captain America, Robert Gates is loyal. He's a real Boy Scout, literally. He made the rank of Eagle Scout and sits on the Boy Scouts' executive board. Loyalty. And what is the difference between loyalty, tribalism, and duty? It's a trifecta to justify deception under the facade of nobility and good intentions. What crimes have been committed in the name of duty? What secrets have been buried in the name of loyalty? Tribalism is a scourge of humanity that simultaneously unites and tears us apart. Oxymoronic in a sense, just like military intelligence, which is where Gates got his start. Gates got his bachelor's in history from the College of William and Mary. A master's in the same field from Indiana University. While getting his master's, he decided to join the CIA, which he did in 1966. The CIA sponsored his commission as an Air Force lieutenant. He worked as an intelligence officer until 1969, at which point he worked directly for the CIA as an analyst, specializing in the Soviet Union. He followed Soviet strategic intentions and capabilities as they related to Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. He completed a PhD in Russian-Soviet history at Georgetown University in 1974. That same year, he left the CIA to work at the National Security Council. He returned to the CIA in 1979. He worked in the Office of Strategic Research. Promotions came frequently, like a rocket was tied to his rear end. In 1982, he was Deputy Director for Intelligence, and by 86, appointed by Reagan as Deputy Director of U.S. Intelligence. This is during the same time that William Casey was Director at the CIA, a time that includes the Iran-Iraq War and the Iran-Contra Affair. Reagan's biography mentions giving weapons to the Iranians at the encouragement of Casey as a way to get American hostages returned. The agency at this time was full of questionable dealings. Gates's promotion to deputy director came just before the Iran-Contra affair came to light. He wasn't implicated in the Iran-Contra affair directly, but was accused of shredding documents to protect the recently deceased former director, William Casey. Loyalty, duty, tribalism, or perhaps just baseless rumor. Gates's job during the Iran-Iraq War was to give the White House and Congress intelligence assessments about both those nations and the Soviets. during the 80s, the CIA assisted the Iraqis in acquiring weapons, which is considered a controversial move. Gates has been criticized for not having provided lawmakers with enough information about both warring nations and perhaps providing misleading information. While the Iran-Iraq war was going strong, Reagan nominated Gates to be Director of Central Intelligence. His nomination was withdrawn due to the Iran-Contra affair taint. Nonetheless, he was appointed deputy director, where he played a key role in guiding our policy towards the Russians. Perhaps the most direct way he did so was as a delegate for the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty talks. He helped negotiate the limit to how many nuclear weapons each nation would have. Perhaps most importantly, Gates had a front row seat for the collapse of the Soviet Union. He went from deputy director of the CIA to deputy national security advisor to director of Central Intelligence while the Soviet Union fell apart. He was there to guide President Bush during this time. A former CIA director himself, in 91, when Gates was nominated to be director of the CIA, the taint of the Iran-Contra affair followed him, but his expertise overrode the smell. Some analysts accused him of asking for the intel about the Soviets to be presented in the bleakest terms in an effort to please his former boss, William Casey, who wanted to hear things that way. If that was the worst of his sins, then he'd do just fine as director, it seems. However, with our 2020 hindsight, we might criticize Gates for not doing more to help the Soviet Union states transition to thriving democracies. We might not. Is it the U.S.'s job to make sure the world becomes democratic? We might not. Such action might simply be a fool's errand. Perhaps he didn't think it was possible. The U.S. did get involved in Russia's civil war to no avail. Gates is the one with the degrees in Russian history, and whatever his agency was doing, it worked out. The Soviet Union itself was no longer a threat. But oh, you know, the devil you know versus the one you don't. But perhaps I'm being too generous. Former Secretary of State George Shultz would probably say so, as would former CIA Director Stanfield Turner and former CIA analyst Melvin Goodman. They noted that Gates's and Casey's CIA of the 80s always exaggerated the Soviet threat. They even saw Gorbachev's glasnost and perestroika as ploys to trick the West, which Shultz insisted wasn't the case, and we know now, you know, they were quite genuine. Shultz was an economist, and he could see it. Why couldn't the historians and analysts pick it up? Well, yeah, it was an economic collapse that was happening in Russia, so maybe the economists were better able to see it. But the CIA has those on the payroll as well. Former director Stanfield Turner noted the lack of discussion in CIA reports on Soviet economic problems in the Casey Gates CIA.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
What were the CIA economists doing? Melvin Goodman testified before Congress Gates and Casey exaggerated the Soviet threat. So they were probably just being excluded from the reports or ignored. But why? As Upton Sinclair said, it's hard to get someone to understand something if their paycheck depends on them not understanding it. Reagan wanted a military buildup. A defeated Soviet Union in need of economic support to transition to democracy wasn't part of the plan. A tricky Soviet Union trying to sucker the U.S. into slowing arms production and redirecting money to humanitarian aid. That fits the plan perfectly. That's what Reagan wanted to believe, and that's what his CIA told him. If the critics are to be believed. Enough conjecture. As director of the CIA, Gates created the Directorate of Intelligence, which helped streamline the accuracy and reporting within the agency. He believed in the need for human-to-human intelligence and worked on better recruitment and training methods, as well as modernizing agency technology. Gates left the CIA in 1993 and began his academic career. He spoke at universities and published his autobiography, From the Shadows, The Ultimate Insider's Story of Five Presidents and How They Won the Cold War in 1996. He also joined the board of directors of several companies. This list is not all-inclusive, but we've got NACCO Industries, Brinker International, Parker Drilling, and even the nation's largest mutual fund company, Fidelity Funds. He served on and serves on nonprofit boards as well, including the American Council on Education, the National Association of State Universities and Land-Grant Colleges, and, as I mentioned before, the Boy Scouts of America. The academic life pleased him. He was always an excellent student. It only followed he'd be a dean or university president. Well, he was both. He was a dean of the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University and then president of Texas A&M itself. As president, he increased research funding, expanded the campus, strengthened ties with the military, and increased the number of minority and international students, and supported programs of inclusion and diversity. In 2005, George Bush offered him the position of Director of National Intelligence, and he turned it down, saying, quote, "He had nothing to look forward to in D.C. and plenty to look forward to at A&M. Poor Gates was just a bit like Scarface. As soon as he got out, they pulled him right back in. In 2006, he was offered and accepted the position of Secretary of Defense. How do you turn that down? He oversaw the surge in Iraq, as well as the removal of troops, which continued under Obama. He was also there for Obama's surge in Iraq. He removed a wartime commander in Afghanistan, General David D. McKiernan, and replaced him with General Stanley McChrystal. McChrystal was more into counterinsurgency tactics, while McKiernan was a bit old school, so to speak. Gates helped move the military to focus on counterterrorism and counterinsurgency, and he criticized NATO partners for not being well trained in the task. He worked to reform procurement, you know, the whole proverbial $200 hammers, and tried to get rid of that process, or reform that process. He also cut expenditures on high-ticket items like fighter jets, instead trying to focus the budget on things like special forces. He oversaw the formation of a unified command for Africa. He encouraged Congress to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he wanted the military to be able to handle its repeal in an orderly fashion as opposed to responding to a court order. A study that occurred under his tenure showed that repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell would have minimal to no effect on morale and combat readiness. When it was repealed, the services were prepared for the change in the military code of justice. Concerning Russia, Gates tried to work with Russia wherever they could agree and supported the idea of a reset with relations in the aftermath of the 2008 Russian invasion of Georgia. He urged the U.S. and its allies to maintain a united front against Russia and worried that America's NATO allies were unprepared. Before retiring as Secretary of State in 2011, he directed the U.S. and NATO response to Libya, which saw the overthrow of Gaddafi. In 2011, Gates returned to the academia he seems to love. In 2012, he became Chancellor of William & Mary, his old alma mater. He was National Boy Scout President from 2014 to 2016, and mirroring his work on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, he led the group to end its prohibition on homosexual adult members. In 2014, Gates published Duty, Memoirs of a Secretary at War. In his memoir, Gates expressed some regrets. He wished he had acted more quickly to address sexual assaults within the military, done more to support troops' families and quality of life, pushed harder to reform the procurement process and end wasteful spending. He also regrets not speaking up more about his belief that more troops were needed in Afghanistan. He expressed that the Obama administration didn't have a clear strategy in Afghanistan and was too quick to pull troops from Iraq as well. I'm not sure we've seen the last of Gates. The man is 79, but looking good for his age, and his generation of leaders, they just can't retire. Despite his age, he's working away at his desk at William & Mary now. True retirement probably can't pull him away, but duty can. Well, duty or death. This man will probably go down like his old boss, CIA Director William Casey, working until the very end. All right, and now for some interesting news stories. I called the man an accused KGB agent or accused Russian spy because there's not much information that he was actually a Russian spy, but it's an interesting story nonetheless. All right, so Walter Glenn Primrose, he's 67 years old, now, and he was arrested for basically assuming someone else's identity. He got the birth certificate of a deceased infant. His wife did as well. And so they pretty much just changed their identities to these people who had died. He, at the age of 39, enlisted in the Coast Guard, and which he was too old to do, but as this other person, he was young enough to do, and had a full career with a security clearance and everything. Well, he has been discovered and is in detention. He has bills that he wants paid, but the FBI will not let him communicate with people to get those bills paid. And people are not allowed to pay his bills on his behalf, and he's quite upset. It's like, well, I'll get out of jail, and I'll have all these, you know, additional fees from being late on my bill payment. And I guess he has a bit of a point. As far as the accusation of him being a Russian spy, well, there are pictures of he and his wife in KGB uniforms, but that they claim they were a prank, and so far, there's really not been any information released to indicate otherwise. All right, so career plan. If you're worried about retirement, here you go. I'm getting a little too old to get my 20 years in or something. All you can do is don't do as this fellow did and use the birth certificate of someone else. As you can see, will likely get caught, even if that is the birth certificate of someone who has already passed. If convicted, he and his wife face 17 years in prison. Remember, when speaking of Gates, I mentioned that he created the United Africa Command. It was very clever that he did so because Russia has been, and China both, have been moving into Africa, and we can start to see the effect that is having, the destabilizing effect. You may have been following the news and learned about the military attacks or the airport coming under attack in Sudan. Essentially, you have infighting between generals who had led the coup before. There was a coup sometime past, and there are two different kind of factions now. There were perhaps more, but the two fighting it out are General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who is the head of the Sudanese Armed Forces, and General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemedti. Now, Hemedti is the commander of the Rapid Support Forces, which is a paramilitary group. It's kind of militias, and were largely responsible for the Darfur genocide. This group has been linked to the Wagner Group out of Russia. Wagner was invited to Sudan by former President Omar al-Bashir, the one that was deposed in the 2019 coup. He was reaching out to Russia, you know, hoping to create strong connections, help keep himself in power. That didn't quite work. And once he was removed, Wagner made connections with Hamedi. Wagner has control of some gold mines there. You know, you have these warlords all over, well, not all over Africa, but in certain regions of Africa controlling precious metals, timber and such, and gems. Well, Wagner seems to be replacing them. It's lucrative and helps provide the Russian military with cash. In return for that cash, the Wagner group, they put down terrorists by any means necessary, and terrorists can be actual terrorists or anyone who disagrees with whomever hired Wagner. The hope, or I guess the plan may be for many African leaders, is that Wagner group may at least provide some sort of stability, but it does not seem to be what is happening in Sudan. They are also in, Wagner group is in the Central African Republic, Mozambique, Libya, and Mali. Wagner Group is one for the U.S. intelligence community and world watchers in general to keep an eye on. They have their finger in many pies around the world, gems, gold, probably cobalt. It is a private army at this point, rivaling that of nations. They will likely have a pretty strong say in the direction of how Russia turns out should the Russian government collapse. In other intelligence news, I guess I have to give a little bit of a history lesson to explain. Armenia is starting to lean toward, well, away from Russia. Armenia is in the Commonwealth of Independent States. It's been kind of compared to like a European Union of former Soviet republics. Kazakhstan is in it, Uzbekistan, and Ukraine was in it until 2018. I don't know exactly why they would leave, and Georgia was in it until 2008. They left after Russia invaded them. So, you know, it's kind of hard to have a Commonwealth of Independent States if your largest partner keeps invading its members. Well, Armenia has some pretty serious territorial disputes with Azerbaijan. It should be noted that Armenia and Azerbaijan are both in the CIS. There is land that Armenia claims is an exclave, and Azerbaijan claims to be theirs. There is, you know, people, we say that the principle of popular sovereignty, well, you know, like people have the right to declare their own government or independence, but international law doesn't really recognize that. International law leans more toward territorial integrity. And there's, you know, a pretty serious question about, well, who should this land belong to? The Soviet Union had assigned it to Azerbaijan. And when Azerbaijan got its independence, it was kind of there. Armenia kind of took it militarily for a while. And Azerbaijan has grown stronger and has taken some of the territory back. And not quite all, but it seems that that's the direction Azerbaijan's going, that they want complete control of it. Well, there is also a group called the CSTO, which is kind of like NATO for former Soviet states. But Azerbaijan is not in that. Armenia is. And Azerbaijan, they're buddies with Turkey. And, you know, they speak Turkic languages, so they have that sort of cultural similarity. And what is occurring is Armenia is asking Russia for protection, for one, but saying, hey, you know, we're both Azerbaijan and ourselves are in the CIS. So, you know, come on, we should kind of be helping this out. But Russia's response seems to be something akin to, since you were both in the CIS, then it's more of a pre-existing condition left over from the Soviet Union. And so it's not truly an external threat. And since it's not truly an external threat, we're limited in how we can respond. Armenia is not really happy with that answer, especially because they are in the CSTO, the Collective Security Treaty Organization. Azerbaijan is not. When Azerbaijan attacks, or they're, you know, that's their claim that they're attacking. Azerbaijan will claim the Armenians attack, you know, et cetera and so on. And there are now Russian peacekeepers and a Russian brokered peace, but the Armenians claim that the Russians aren't really doing anything to truly enforce the peace. Russia, for its part, probably doesn't really want to get directly involved in protecting Armenia because they do not want to aggravate Turkey, which is a major power player in the region, and they're trying to leverage Turkish influence internationally. But the big takeaway is Armenia is beginning to get frustrated and may perhaps leave the Soviet sphere of influence. Where exactly they could go is kind of hard to say. I mean, they could lean toward the U.S. or Western Europe. Turkey is in NATO, and Turkey is more or less aligned with Azerbaijan. So it's a really, really complicated, hard situation. That's our show for today. Very soon, we'll get our next episode, the last in our series on modern CIA directors who shaped our policy with Russia. And that episode will be about John Brennan. Thank you for listening. If you support independent media, subscribe, like, and share. Reviews and interactions help us greatly, so please leave a comment or suggestion. Tell us who you want us to profile next. You can find us on all major podcast platforms. Visit our site at CIAfiles.net. From there, you can easily add us to your socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and buy some of that sweet CIA Files swag.